Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone.
Keep your hand welcome back, on folks. Your gun. There are some strange developing cases. This is really, I'm not really sure what to make of this. So, Bill Clinton has issued a statement. He says, I have called for the full release of the Epstein files. I have provided a sworn statement of what I know, and just this week, I've agreed to appear in person before the committee. It's still not enough for Republicans on the House Oversight Committee. Now, Chairman Comer says he wants cameras, but only behind closed doors. Who benefits from this arrangement? It's not Epstein's victims who deserve justice. Oh my God, these people. Not the public who deserve the truth. It serves only partisan interests. This is not fact-finding. It's pure politics. I will not sit idly as they use me as a prop in a closed-door kangaroo court by a Republican Party running scared. If they want answers, let's stop the games and do this the right way in a public hearing where the American people can see for themselves what this is really all about. I mean, pretty brazen, but not exactly out of character. Depends on what your definition of is, right? I mean, for this guy, he's like, this doesn't help the victims. You scumbag. Every victim that I've heard discuss it of Jeffrey Epstein has said that Bill Clinton was his right-hand man. Every single one. The one woman I was on with, Alex Stein, and she said that it was Bill Clinton that introduced Jeffrey Epstein as, quote, the king of America. And, of course, Bill Clinton, I mean, my God. I'm just trying to, like, what would give you this level of confidence? That's pretty crazy. I mean, he must really have an ace up his sleeve of some sort. He's literally all over the Epstein story. Epstein visited the Clinton White House like a dozen times. He thinks he's going to turn this around on the Republicans? You think the crew thinks he's personally aware of how much they've scrubbed it? I mean, he must be. That's what I'm saying. Like, he must have like an inside track that they're like, don't worry, Bill. We completely covered your participation up. You don't have to worry about it. Like, it's crazy. We don't need the Epstein files to know that Bill Clinton was like his best friend. He is acknowledging that there's victims. Which, I mean, just my God. And these people are just despicable. Really, that's the only word for it. Now, they're trying so hard to cover up some of the stuff that's been revealed. So one of the things that was revealed was that apparently people discovered Jeffrey Epstein's account name on a lot of accounts, like things like YouTube, was Little St. Jeff, Little ST Jeff 1. And people found a Fortnite account with this handle that is at this moment active in Israel and has been active for years. The only time this account was not active was in 2019 when Jeffrey Epstein was in prison. It was the only time that Fortnite wasn't played on this account. Then people discovered this and they screenshotted the player's profile and uploaded it to the Wayback Machine on the Internet Archive. It has now been scrubbed. So who has the power to force the Internet Archive to delete material that had been archived by Internet users? It's a good question. But then it comes out from Fortnite. Hey, official Fortnite here. This was a ruse by a Fortnite player. A few days ago, an existing Fortnite account owner changed their name from something totally unrelated to Little St. Jeff 1, following the revelation of Little St. Jeff 1 as a name on YouTube. These Fortnite trackers only display your current name, not any prior changes to it. We have no record of the subject's email addresses referenced in the public documents. So they're basically covering this up. Then why did the Internet Archive delete it then? Why did the account itself go private all of a sudden? Why is the only time the account is not recorded playing Fortnite when Jeffrey Epstein was in prison? This, to me, again, screams of a cover-up. You're not making us think it didn't happen. You're just making us think that you're in on it.
Introducing Ultra DNA Revival, the advanced daily supplement designed to help you feel and perform at your absolute best, starting at the cellular level. Backed by cutting-edge mitochondrial and DNA support science, Ultra DNA Revival delivers noticeable all-day energy without stimulants or crashes, faster recovery and greater endurance, sharper focus and mental clarity, support for healthy blood sugar levels, stronger immune system function, enhanced liver health and natural detoxification, reduces everyday stress and anxiety, protection against oxidative stress, and the visible signs of aging. And again, this is a private label of an already best-selling brand that found this. Thousands of customers report feeling the difference in as little as 7 to 14 days. Right now, take advantage of our best pricing ever. VIP members, $34.95. Regular, $59.59. Save over 40% with a VIP membership for $30 a month. Experience the revival your body has been waiting for. Secure your DNA revival today at thealexshowstore.com.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. This is the War Room with Harrison Smith.
Y'all see the picture of Jeffrey Epstein in Tel Aviv with his hair all grown out? Y'all see that one? It looks just like him. Nobody has ever seen his face, but I wouldn't be surprised. I would not be surprised if he was still alive and well, playing video games. Yeah, and that was well known. That's what he did. Like, it's not out of the question that he was playing Fortnite. And all the suspicious ways of covering it up, it's just not helping. It's just really not helping. Maybe that's the message we need to get across. In fact, let's go to clip 47 here. I believe this guy himself is, there's the picture. I mean, it looks a lot like him. It looks a hell of a lot like him. And he's got security guards with the ear buds in. Security guard is Zelensky. Of course it is. It's Volodymyr Zelensky and his boss walking around Tel Aviv. Let's go to clip 47 here. And I just can't believe the mainstream media is trying to cover this up. It's just not working. Let's watch.
So I'm sure you've heard the trope, Jews own the media, right? Well, hold. I'll come back to that in a second. Isn't it interesting how network news can report every single detail about Epstein except for one? They'll cover the island. They'll cover the political figures like Trump and Clinton, the billionaires like Gates, the horrific abuse allegations, victim accounts, legal details, nonstop calls for transparency and releases. But the one thing they conveniently leave out is that Epstein was a Jewish supremacist Zionist, and he had extremely strong and well-documented relationships with Netanyahu, and he was working for Israel. But the mainstream media is leaving all of those facts out. Instead, they're packaging it as a Russian operation, Russian-only, KGB intelligence. Because that's the only foreign influence that they're allowed to say out loud. The story stays framed as a scandal, never as a geopolitical operation. Total silence on that. Ehud Barak, that's the former prime minister of Israel, is photographed going in and out of Epstein's home for years, yet somehow he never makes the nightly news. A senior Israeli military intelligence officer stayed at Epstein's Manhattan residence for extended periods of time. And that's not gossip. That's not Twitter. That's documented journalism. So why does the mainstream media treat Epstein like he was just some lone predator when the evidence shows international power connections? Because the moment you mention Israel, suddenly the story becomes too sensitive, too complicated, too risky. And when facts can't be reported because they're politically inconvenient, we don't have journalism, we have PR. And when it turns into PR, it feeds the same old trope that Jews, they own the media. But that's not true. It's Israel that holds that role. And once again, they are using money and influence to shape what's getting reported. And that's the real story behind the silence. That's why Epstein's full story still hasn't been told.
So, I think he's right. I think Israel, wields outsized influence. And, of Of course, even now they're trying to get us into war with Iran and are seemingly having some success in that. In fact, I can give you an update to some of that here. Iran Army reports fire at Tehran barracks, as well as there have been multiple examples of sabotage going on. I'm just trying to find the right one here. U.S. government has issued a significant warning urging Americans in Iran to leave immediately if it's safe to do so, citing rapidly deteriorating security. Citizens are warned not to rely on U.S. assistance and consider land exits to Armenia and Turkey if possible. Something big is happening. That was at 1:19 p.m. You have the barracks have caught fire. There was another building in Iran that seemingly randomly caught fire. I'm not able to find exactly which one it is, but another military installation. And then you have things like this. This was yesterday. Mark Levin. It's time to militarily attack Iran. It's time. It's time. It's just like, what? No, it's time to start a war. It's time, guys. Hey, guys, I'm looking at my watch here. It's looking like it's time to war. It's wartime. It's time to start fighting Iran, everybody. Yeah, the Winter Olympics are starting in Italy, I understand. Yeah, this is a spiral. There's nothing abnormal about a spiral, right? It's not like that's a internationally recognized. Wait, I think it's a swastika. Hold on. Is that a swastika? Oh, my God. The anti-Semites have done it again. Now, the Olympic rings were, in fact, designed by Adolf Hitler, so that's kind of interesting. It's all very interesting, these anti-Semites who run the world. The world is run by anti-Semites. They control the media. We need a final solution to the anti-Semite problem. Mark Levin, it's time to militarily attack Iran. It's time, everybody. It's time. It's time to militarily attack Iran. If we can't get our military assets fully in place in 5 weeks to attack Iran, a regime with virtually no navy or air force or massive internal unrest, then we have a very serious problem. After all, we're not talking about China or Russia. It's this type of stuff. Now, Mark Levin is not Israeli. He's American. Why is he demanding that we constantly fight Iran? And he's not even pretending that it's for America anymore. It's just, it's time. It's time to attack Iran. We got to do it right now. And frankly, if you can't do it, you kind of suck. He's basically like, if you can't attack Iran right now, like, what is wrong with you? You're that bad at this that you can't attack Iran? We got no reason to, buddy. It's time. It's time, guys. It's time to attack Iran. Look at that. It's 4:12 and 55 seconds Central Standard Time. Guess we got to go to war. It's time now. Is this going to work? Is that working? Does anybody read this and they're like, you know, I was against war in Iran before, but I didn't realize that it was time. I'm sorry, I didn't realize that according to Mark Levin, it is now time to go to war with Iran. See, I thought I was against it because of the quagmires that we keep getting involved in, because it literally has nothing to do with us, does not benefit us, they don't threaten us. It's purely and 100% for the state of Israel. So I'm not really in favor of it, but according to Mark Levin, it is now time. So very convincing, very well done. So why is it time? Why is now the time, folks? Now's the time because the American government, occupied by what you could call Israel, has spent the last year or so using every power in our playbook to bring Iran to the brink of destruction. Again, not for our benefit. It has nothing to do with us. In fact, I didn't grab the video, but another character from my Eighth Front video, the anti-Semitism czar, who, by the way, he's an American citizen. He was born in America. He apparently represents all Jewish people in America. He has been given ambassadorial rank inside America. So we just now grant members of the Jewish community diplomatic immunity so they can do their business. What? But he's going around bragging about using American power to benefit the Jewish community exclusively, doing things like saying, going to Ireland and saying, you have to shut down your BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanction movement, or else we're going to sanction Ireland. So using the incredible economic power and influence of the United States to get Ireland to stop boycotting Israel. Just like we go after the ICC when they charge him with, charge Netanyahu with crimes there. Yehud Copeland, that's the one. And I got a video on this, clip 51. This is Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, lifelong New York liberal, worked his entire career directly under George Soros, by the way. Here's him bragging about doing something that you really only heard about in like Alex Jones documentaries 15 years ago. Like that, what you're about to hear the Treasury Secretary say is the type of stuff that is supposed to be revealed in a congressional hearing 10 years after the fact, and it becomes a giant scandal and everybody involved, you know, gets like thrown in jail or dishonorably discharged. But the world has been changed so much that Scott Bessent is now bragging about doing this, and it's being treated like a good thing. Let's watch.
The Treasury, and what we have done is created a dollar shortage in the country. At a speech at the Economic Club of New York in March, I outlined the strategy. It came to a swift and, I would say, grand culmination in December when one of the largest banks in Iran went under. There was a run on the bank. The central bank had to print money. The Iranian currency went into free fall. Inflation exploded. And hence, we have seen the Iranian people out on the street. We will continue monitoring all the partners, all the Iranian partners. The good news, Senator, is that we have seen, and we can see it with our fencing.
So, like, So you're bragging about that? He's literally like, yeah, you know, we destroyed Iran. We destroyed their currency. There now we've caused riots in the street. And so now, you know, now we got to go to war with them. So now they're mistreating the rioters that we created by our sanctions. And it's like, but what did Iran do to us? But why are we doing this to them? What is the excuse of doing something which, just by the very nature of, you know, economic downturns, probably killed a whole bunch of people, definitely put millions and millions of random Iranians in dire straits? For what? Honestly, what have they done to us? Rats leaving the ship, Bessent says of Iranian capital flight. We've seen the Iranian leadership wiring money out of the country like crazy, the U.S. Treasury Secretary told senators. It's like, this does not make sense from an American perspective. Iran has not done anything to us, as far as I can tell. I don't know. I can't think of anybody they've killed. Anything that you would say that they're doing is like, not a bad thing. It's like, well, they sell weapons to Russia. It's like, okay, why did America start the Ukrainian war with Russia? Like, what are we doing here? What did Iran ever do to us? I honestly want to know. Because the answer is nothing. The answer is America has absolutely no interest in Iran. As far as I can tell, again. Now, if you're claiming that it's like about the freedom of the people, is I just don't believe you, frankly. And like to get into, guys, you can grab the video from yesterday from Marco Rubio. Because Marco Rubio is going to meet with this Iranian in Oman. And the Iranians are like, we're not interested because it's supposed to be about nuclear talks. And they want to, you know, Rubio and the Israeli Americans want to, you know, change the topic of discussion. And it's just like, why are we doing this for them? Why is this the entire focus of our entire government? Which, again, this is why it's important to actually talk about this. Like, I don't want to spend all day, all show on the Israelis or the Jewish diaspora. But if we don't talk about it, we're going to have to keep talking about it. You understand? Like, we got to actually confront this stuff and then make choices that take it into account. And then we can no longer be suffering under the control of a bunch of psychos who have a hard-on for bombing Iran to death and aren't even bothering to try to justify it through Americanism anymore. It's so insulting. Like, our power, our economic strength, wielded by Scott Bessent to destroy the economy of Iran, to spark riots, to get leverage when we negotiate with them, to try to get them to give up their ballistic missiles because their ballistic missiles are a threat to Israel. And it's like, where is the benefit for America in any of this? And how is it that the Treasury Secretary is just simply now bragging about doing this to a country that we're not at war with and that hasn't done anything to us? It's so evil. Here's Marco Rubio talking about, you know, where the negotiations with Iran are going to begin. Let's watch.
As far as the topic of those discussions and what the agenda needs to be, look, I think in order for talks to actually lead to something meaningful, they will have to include certain things. And that includes the range of their ballistic missiles. That includes their sponsorship of terrorist organizations across the region. That includes the nuclear program. And that includes the treatment of their own people.
So that's the requisite to start talks. Okay, so we're not going to start talks until you agree to completely disarm yourself, is what he's saying. He's like, if talks are going to happen, you know, it's got to be ballistic missiles and, you know, how you treat your own people. And it's basically like, hey, for us to even start talks, you're going to have to just completely disarm yourself. Leave yourself totally defenseless as a starting point. And then we'll come to some sort of agreement. It's like, oh, why? Because have you promised them if they give up their ballistic missiles, then you'll treat them nicely? Do you think they're going to buy that? See, we've talked about this before. The fact is, our unwillingness to ever break from Israel, our, frankly, slave-like dependence on Israel in the Middle East, has actually left us incapable of negotiating with Iran. Because time and time again, we will promise somebody something, Israel will double cross that person, then we protect Israel. It happened with Qatar and the Hamas negotiators. We set up an agreement, we set up a meeting to negotiate the ceasefire. They, you know, the Hamas people came to the meeting that America set up, and then Israel killed all of them. How do you think negotiations are going to go next time? They're probably not going to happen. If you want Iran to actually come to the table and actually make agreements in good faith, then you have to stop stabbing in the back constantly. You have to stop making agreements with them and then breaking that. You have to stop menacing them constantly, relentlessly, forever. But this is all in a world in which diplomacy is actually a goal. America is ruled by Israelis who want to destroy Iran, and that's all they're trying to do. And that's all they're going to try to do. And any off-ramp to that eventual conclusion is going to be ignored, as in their suicidal drive to start World War III, so they can finally be done with needing America, because that's what it's all about. And we can go on and on about this, but again, I mean, if we don't deal with this problem, I don't see how we deal with any other problem, quite frankly. And we can't keep going on this. I don't know, I got other stuff to get into as well, but clearly, we are still pushing for war with Iran for absolutely no discernible reason. And it ain't Israelis that are pushing for it. It's the Mark Levins amongst us. Let's go to clip 68 here. I think we just have time to do this. One of the greatest to ever do it, Mark Dice, attended a city council meeting yesterday, and it's gone totally viral. One of the greatest, most consistent content creators in the right wing, Mark Dice. Let's watch.
Next, we have Mark Dice. Thank you. I'm Professor Mark Dice. I teach intercultural communication at California State University and also conduct corporate training seminars with Fortune 500 companies about diversity, equity, and inclusion, or anti-racism in layman's terms. And I just want to go over a few things because, as I'm probably sure you heard, a lot of people are pushing back and opposing critical race theory, the Republicans and the conservatives. So first of all, if anybody starts asking if critical race theory is taught in the schools or applied in corporate America and they seem to be against it, just insinuate that that person is a racist. Most white people are so defensive, if you simply ask them if they're racist because they don't want to be labeled one, that they'll usually shut up, or insinuate that maybe one of their ancestors owned slaves or that their grandfather was in the KKK. That'll usually get them to stop, because we've been making such tremendous progress, but it's time to double down because people are really waking up. We've been able to convince most white people that there's a white privilege problem in America, despite few people knowing that actually Asians have the highest income, numerous Asian groups, Chinese, Japanese, even some Indian Americans from India, not Native Americans. And also, you know, nobody really talks about this, thankfully, but they are starting to wake up that white people are a minority in California and Hawaii and Texas and soon to be numerous other states, Nevada, Georgia, and Maryland as well. And if people start to figure that out, that's going to really undermine our agenda, because how are we supposed to paint them as an oppressor class that are keeping down the poor minorities when, in fact, you know, the white people are minorities in half a dozen states and growing, like I said. So if anybody asks anything like that, just tell them that's a Fox News talking point. That's something that Tucker Carlson mentions. Nobody will really pay much attention to them from that point. And despite people starting to wake up to this agenda, we have been having a lot of success with the media.
Absolutely brilliant. I love seeing how uncomfortable they get. Like, is he supposed to be saying this? I don't know if he's supposed to be saying this, Mark Dice. Again, one of the best to ever do it. Go follow him on YouTube, at Mark Dice. He's on X as well, at Mark Dice. We got to get him on again. He's always pumping out great stuff and has been one of probably the most consistent voice on the right for the entirety of the time that he's been on here. So we got a lot more videos to go to in the next segment. We're going to be joined by Matt Baker in the third hour, but not the Matt Baker you're thinking. This is Matt with three T's, Baker, and he's a country singer of renown and is going absolutely viral these days. But I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. And folks, we are getting close to the end here at InfoWars. I don't know how much I can tell you, but if you watch the Alex Jones Show, you've heard him make reference to this. And I can tell you we got some big, big things working behind the scenes. Again, I don't want to give too much away, but it really is going to be a metamorphosis once we are eventually led to the guillotine and have our head chopped off. Won't it be a surprise when, instead of dying, we morph into something even more powerful? That is absolutely what's going to happen. And honestly, at this point, I think most of us at InfoWars are like, we're ready. We're ready to move on. We're ready to actually be out from under this wet blanket. But we've struggled and fought this long because it matters that they not be able to do to us what they're trying to do. It matters that we have fought them and not settled and not backed down. And at every one of their little manipulations to try to screw over the auction or rig the bankruptcy process, we have put in the work and the money and the effort to combat it. And we have held them off for this long, because it's important that we show them, when you try to destroy free speech through the legal system, Americans know how to fight back. We'll be right back, folks. To a mosque, gonna throw some rocks, tell the Ayatollah, gonna put you in a box. It's time.
I have told the folks at Bigley, I said, I want to have the widest selection of combat daggers, trench knives, folding knives, you name it. They're high quality brands that you buy in bulk that are very competitively priced. And then support the broadcast, because I love knives. I know you love knives. They have finally gotten a whole bunch of the knives that were sold out back in. And they've gotten a bunch of new, really nice flip knives that I went out and told them what brands I liked, what was going on, and they were able to get it. And so a bunch of the knives that sold out a few months ago, they're back in. And then these bad boys right here. I mean, these are absolutely amazing. Flip really easy and locks for you. This is forest green, murdered out. It's got my little signature on it, so it's a little piece of history. This is a great knife. This knife sells in stores for $75 all day long. We're selling it for 40-something and even bigger discounts, up to 50% off right now. Some of these knives are as low as $20 a piece. It's a great memento. It's a great gift for your friends and family, and it funds the operation. Go there now. We've got also the Murdered Out Black, and I love how it's that Kydex, and it's got that real fine engraving on it, so it gives you that great feeling, that great... Because I got sent hundreds of knives from dozens of companies, and I'm the one that chose all these. And these are from really good companies, really good quality, and it's just a great deal. And so do your knife shopping at thealexjonesstore.com. But let me tell you what's back in stock. We have the new ones, Alex Jones Blackout Folding Knife, 7.65 assisted opening folding knife, 3.5 high carbon Damascus blade, 1095 plus 515 N20. This is all quality. D2 steel, black PVD coating, and stonewash finish, 3.3 millimeter black thickness, black G10 handle for a secure grip, 15.5 millimeter handle thickness for confident hand feel, ball bearing pivot system for smooth deployment. I mean, it's a nice quality knife. All black, blackout finished. I call it murdered out. Fast, decisive, assisting, operating, limited production, live before it sells out. And then we've got the same knife, but it's silver blade folding knife. If you like that, it's got a nice little hook on the end, so you can tie it to things. The forest green folding knife that is my close second, really a sexy knife. Same as the other one, it's just got that forest green. Call it forest, it's kind of like an in-between forest and olive, but nice. Kind of Border Patrol. I call it Border Patrol green. Let's change the name, Border Patrol green. That's actually what it is. This bad boy. These all sold out, but they always hold back a few hundred in case orders come in later or whatever. So tip of the spear, Spartan, trench knife with brass knuckles, murdered out, and the skull crusher. A few hundred of those. They held back a few of these. It had sold out, but there's about 200 left. The Life Fire with this beauty limited edition. That funds the operation as well. It's a little different. Skull Crusher isn't as big. Alex Jones Phantom Folding Knife. This has been sold out. They only got 500 of these the first run. Sold out in one day. It is back. They got 1,000 of them. And it's just a great knife. Really sleek and really strong. Very well made. And you've got it in orange. Alex Jones Burnt Orange Folding Knife. I like that. Now we've got the Alex Jones Ring Blade. This sold out the quickest last time. That's an amazing product. And they're up to 50% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. While you're there, get some ultramethylene blue and take advantage of the very best supplements in the world. We'll be right back. Thanks for funding the Second American Revolution worldwide.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Did you get that video in, guys? Because, you know, I asked and they answered. I said, what is in it for us? Why are we still rattling the sabers with Iran? What's the point? And lo and behold, 10 minutes ago, Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee answered this question on TV. So we'll go to his answer. Maybe finally I can learn why it is that we have to spend all of our resources going after this country in the Middle East that hasn't bothered us. Let's watch.
Yeah, I don't sense that there is this panic going on. The Israelis are amazingly resilient people. They've come to know that they live in a very dangerous place, and there are people every day wake up trying to kill them. I wish Americans understood that. And when I say Americans, I wish Americans understood that the Iranians want to kill them. They've been saying for 47 years, death to America. A lot of Americans say, what happens in Iran doesn't affect me. Oh, yes, it does. Because they've been telling us for 47 years, if they ever had a long-range ballistic missile, they'd light that puppy up and send it straight to the United States. What we don't fully understand is how many Iranian operatives, maybe in the form of Hezbollah, got into our country through a very open border during the Biden years, how many of them are sleeper cells just standing by waiting on an order from Tehran to unleash holy hell against Americans? We simply don't know. But we know that Hezbollah is already in the Western Hemisphere in 12 Central and Southern South American states. They're not there because they want to go to Brazil's carnival. So let's get real clear. They are a global threat, not just a local threat.
Wait, what? Wait. I'm sorry. I thought I was going to hear a reason we had to go to war with Iran. I just heard a reason that we don't have a reason to go to war with Iran. He's like, if they ever developed a weapon that could actually hit us, they would use it. So, of course, we got to go to war with them. What? So, if I can translate, what you're saying is they don't even have the ability to attack us, is actually what you're saying here. They don't have a nuclear weapon. They don't have a nuclear weapon delivery system. I think what you're saying is we're good, actually. We're safe from Iran. And in fact, the only reason we would have to fear Iran would be if we injected ourselves into a conflict that has nothing to do with us and started to fight Iran, then we would inspire backlash. It's funny that he says 47 years. Like, he's got an exact date to the time when Iran first started saying death to America. I wonder if it's been 47 years since the Iranian people overthrew the puppet government that America planted there in the 50s. Is that what it is? Is it because we injected ourselves into Iran in the first place that they started to hate us? And here we are 47 years later, but they haven't done anything in those 47 years. They haven't actually acted on any of that in the 47 years. But for those 47 years, we have been relentlessly in partnership with Israel, doing everything we possibly can to destroy them. Or the good guys. But we're supposed to be the good guys. Okay. Mike Huckabee is a traitor to this country. I'm amazed he's still ambassador. He was caught meeting with Pollock, the worst spy in American history, who was released by Trump, flew in Sheldon Adelson's private jet, Miriam Adelson's private jet, was met on the tarmac by Netanyahu, kissed the Israeli ground when he got there. Jonathan Pollard. Dude that got, like, a lot of American CIA people killed. Mike Huckabee met with him in secret, and it was, like, discovered and leaked that he met with this guy. Like, Mike Huckabee is a traitor to this country, and he's still ambassador to Israel. And the best reason he can come up with for why we should go after Iran is because they don't like us, basically. That's it. They don't have an ability to attack us. They don't have an ability to make anything of that dislike that, by the way, is pretty well justified, well-founded, considering our relationship with Iran in the past. But that's what we get now is, well, Iran chants death to America, so we have to go to war with them. That's dumb. I think that's very dumb. And I don't know what else there is to say about it. Like, I cannot believe it's gotten to this point. That, like, just don't even try. Just don't even try. It's actually better to take the Marco Rubio tactic of just being like, no, this is for Israel. No, we're not going to start negotiations until you say that your ballistic missiles can't reach Israel. Because it's Israel that we're protecting. It's Israel we're doing this for. Israel is a different state than America. I think I want to remind people of that. I mean, is this not the case? Like, is this not the central thing of all of this? Why isn't Trump doing what he should be doing? Because he's busy doing all this crap. Why are the people around him so terrible? Because they're all in this cabal and puppets of people in this cabal. I mean, is there another reason? I can't figure one out. So what are we going to do about this? Like, honestly, we shouldn't have to do anything. because our system should be responding in a different way. So our system isn't responding. I mean, this is like crisis time at this point. Because we can look to the UK and we can see how this should be responded to. UK police searching two properties linked to Peter Mandelson over Epstein investigation. British police say they're searching two properties linked to Peter Mandelson as part of their investigation into misconduct in public life, following revelations about the former UK ambassador to the US's links to disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein. Since the US Justice Department's latest release of material related to Epstein, Mandelson has been accused of passing on market-sensitive government information that was of clear financial interest to Epstein in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. London's Metropolitan Police said Friday that its officers were carrying out search warrants at two addresses, one in the southern country of Wiltshire and one in Camden, a neighborhood in the north of the capital. The searches are related to an ongoing investigation into misconduct and public office offenses involving a 72-year-old man, said Haley Stewart, Deputy Assistant Commissioner of the MET. Mandelson, 72, has not been arrested, and inquiries are ongoing, she said. Mandelson resigned from the Labour Party on Sunday and quit the House of Lords, the upper chamber of Britain's parliament, on Wednesday. CNN has been unable to contact Mandelson this week. The Mandelson scandal has plunged Keir Starmer's government into crisis and raised questions about the Prime Minister's political judgment. Starmer appointed Mandelson as ambassador last year despite his well-known friendship with Epstein, which continued after the financier was convicted in 2008 for soliciting prostitution of an underage girl. Mandelson had offered scant commentary to British media this week. Previously, he'd said, "I want to say loudly and clearly I was wrong to believe Epstein following his conviction and to continue my association with him afterwards. I apologize unequivocally for doing so to the women and girls who suffered." Two people believed to be police officers are pictured here arriving at the home of Peter Mandelson in London on Friday. Starmer fired Mandelson as ambassador in September following a previous release of Epstein files, which showed Mandelson had penned a handwritten note for the financier's 50th birthday, describing him as, quote, my best pal. The DOJ's latest release of Epstein files revealed that Mandelson, while serving as business secretary in the government of Prime Minister Gordon Brown, appeared to leak sensitive UK government information to Epstein as the country considered a raft of policy measures to aid its recovery from the 2008 financial crisis. Newly released emails from June 2009 showed that Mandelson forwarded Epstein a memo written for Brown, which advocated $20 billion of asset sales to help relieve Britain's debt burden and revealed Labour's tax policy plans. Bank statements from the DOJ's latest release also appear to show that Epstein paid a total of $75,000 into bank accounts linked to Mandelson between 2003 and 2004. Email exchanges also showed that the financier may have sent $10,000 to Ronaldo Avila da Silva, now Mandelson's husband, to help fund his osteopathy course. Addressing Parliament on Wednesday, Starmer said the revelations about Mandelson were beyond infuriating and that the former ambassador had lied repeatedly about his relationship with Epstein. Mandelson betrayed our country, our parliament, and our party, he said. Starmer is under intense pressure to explain the vetting process uncovered about Mandelson's ties to Epstein before his appointment as ambassador a year ago. Following a public outcry, the government has agreed to release documents surrounding Mandelson's appointment. So we haven't seen even the beginning of this here in America. And we're not going to, because they control the system, because the people in the Epstein emails are the very people that would otherwise be empowered to go after them. So, again, I'm shocked that the UK is really showing us up on this, but they are in a very real way. This is one guy that had associations with Epstein as revealed in the files. He was immediately fired. It became a giant scandal. Starmer is being questioned for even, you know, agreeing to work with the guy. Meanwhile, Trump is sending people who are in the Epstein files to negotiate on behalf of Israel against Iran. So we haven't only not gotten the resignations. We haven't even, I mean, there's been like no real solid political scandal despite the wealth of connections in all of this. There's certainly not been any police kicking down the door of Epstein Associates as part of a wider investigation into their finances. And there's not going to be. There's never going to be. So what should we do about this? I really want to know. In a way, it's like suicidal for the mainstream establishment to not do something about this. This is a time where, like, they really need to prove their value and their worth. Right now, they're proving they're incapable or unwilling to to go after some of the most egregious crap we've ever seen in our lives in black and white from the people involved. Yeah, we really need to do something about this. Again, it's not just the UK. Did Brussels interfere in Europe's election? Fallout spreads. The fallout from the U.S. Report on alleged EU interference is now spreading across Europe. And this, of course, was accelerated by the fact that Epstein was also involved in rigging politics across the European continent. And I guess we'll just, you know, sort of keep going with this. We got clip 52 here. This is in the UK. This is Nigel Farage saying what he thinks was behind Jeffrey Epstein. Let's watch.
National Secrets. This is a potential breach of the Official Secrets Act. It involves the royal family. It involves senior members of government. And who knows? Behind it all, maybe even Epstein could have been working for the Putin regime. I believe that this is Bill and Profumo.
He could have been working for the Putin regime. Okay, but he wasn't, though. He was working for the Jews. So what are we talking about? He was working for Israel and the Rothschilds. That's who he was working for, which are one and the same. Because this all goes back to the banking family, the Rothschilds. All of it. All of this goes right back to that. So I don't know. I mean, it's not all that complicated. But it's just like, why are so many people burning their own credibility trying to deny what is obvious and right in front of us? What do they not understand? Are people falling? I mean, I guess leftists, I mean, who knows the way they see the world? I bet they do think it's Putin. I mean, I do keep seeing people posting stuff from the Epstein files being like, he was a white supremacist. Like, okay. Okay, so we're never going to get out of this. So, okay, we're just never going to actually be able to deal with any of these issues, it seems. And I want to go to a video now that is a Super Bowl commercial that will be played this Sunday during the big game. Clip 65, Jewish billionaire Robert Kraft's Blue Square Alliance is one of these infinite number of groups paying millions of dollars to propagandize America. Of course, Robert Kraft, he's the commissioner of the NFL, right? Unless I'm crazy. Oh, the Patriots, that's right. So I was going to say it was the NBA commissioner that's in the Epstein files, saying, I don't wait in the lobby like a goyim. It looks like professional sports is sort of replete with these guys. Let's go to clip 65 here. This is a new Super Bowl commercial. Let's watch.
Dude.
Did you see that?
Some times.
Oh,
bro, look at him.
Oh, my gosh.
Not funny.
Do not listen to that.
Thank you, man.
I know how it feels.
That guy's Jewish, too? Oh, he's gay.
Nah. They're not worth it, bro.
He's gonna go beat him up?
Yeah, you're right.
Let's go hit on some white women,
dude.
Stand up to hate. You didn't put your backpack away, dummy. What are you doing? You get to class, you put your backpack. You didn't lock his locker. This doesn't make any sense. Yeah, this is the other big commercial. About just as convincing, I think. I mean, what are we doing here? What are we doing here, folks? Now, I don't necessarily think there's anything all that wrong about that commercial. Like, whatever. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious what the agenda is here. Hey, dude, you and me against Whitey, right? Us non-white people, we got to stick together against big bad Whitey. is always putting notes on our backs, making us look like fools. Real subtle stuff there. Totally mind blowing. Sad thing is, it's going to be like actually impact. People are going to be like crying from that. Jeffrey Epstein wanted Robert Kraft to hire his lawyer amid Patriots owner's prostitution case, documents show. Well, that's anti-Semitic. I'm sorry, reporting on facts is anti-Semitic in this case. Please avoid. Please avoid doing that. I want to, you know, like I said, not necessarily anything wrong with that commercial. I just think, you know, the racial aspects are a little bit on the nose. No pun intended. I think it's a little bit, again, obvious. Big, bad white people hurting the poor, innocent Jewish person until the black friend shows up and teaches, you know, the white people the way to be. Very, very powerful stuff. Very moving. But on the other hand, you know, this is the double-edged sword. This is the fulfillment of the strategy in that as you conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, and as you have examples of Jewish people doing bad things and the rest of the Jewish community coalescing around them to defend them, then you really do have examples of anti-Semitism that really do affect innocent people in middle school or high school or whatever. And, you know, you can find people online, I'm sure, that, you know, would genuinely be like, yeah, who cares? Like, you know, F them. But like, no, I don't want Jewish kids to be bullied in school for their ethnicity. I'm not actually in favor of that. And I'm not about to fall for, again, the false dichotomy that says you either are, you know, with the Zionist or you just like hate all Jews and want them all to be destroyed and harassed constantly. It's like, nope, not at all. Sick of Israel. I'm sick of the Epstein cabal trying to censor us because we're revealing facts about them. But yeah, kid in school shouldn't be bullied. I don't really have that big of a problem with what we just saw, other than, of course, the racial aspect. But let's compare that to the Christian advertisement from the Super Bowl a couple years ago. I think it was either last year or 2024 when this commercial aired. I'm sure everybody remembers it. Clip number 66. I just want you to know if you want to see if you can tell sort of the difference between these two commercials. Okay. Kid didn't even unlock his locker. This is pathetic. There's no information on the calendar in his locker. He doesn't even put his backpack away. I mean, this is ridiculous. I don't think this really happened. All right, let's go to the commercial from a couple years ago. So, all right. Commercial for Judaism basically saying, stop being mean to the Jews and signaling to black people. It's us against white people. Very sophisticated propaganda. Well done, Mr. Kraft. Now let's go to clip 66. You can see the commercial for the other major religion in America. Let's watch. Remember this one? Remember this humiliation ritual? There you go. The cops have to clean the feet of the criminals. The decent popular girls have to clean the feet of the freaks. The guy who owns his land has to clean the feet of the people trespassing on it. The mom has to clean the feet of her slut daughter. Whatever hell is going on here. Oh, you gotta respect the climate change people trying to destroy your industry here. You gotta respect the migrants that oppose everything about your life but are moving in by the millions. It's so moving, so incredible. There you see the black man reaching out. He's so forgiving for what they've done to him. And there, of course, the piece de resistance, the flamboyant gay man having his feet washed by a priest, and then the line, Jesus doesn't teach hate, he washed feet. He gets us, all of us, Jesus. Love your neighbor. Okay. Are you sensing a bit of a difference here? Both of these commercials were made by people of the religions that they're talking about, right? The Jewish one's made by Jews. I bet the Christian one was made by Jews too, but ostensibly it's from a Christian organization. The message to Jews in the first one was, you are a victim. Everybody secretly hates you and is laughing at you behind your back, and you got to get solidarity with the other non-whites to defeat them. We're stronger together. But you're the victim. Everybody hates you. Everybody's laughing at you behind your back. And you know, you got to find something. Meanwhile, the Christian one is subjugate yourself to the moral superiority of the modern day. Is you need to get on your knees because you're hateful for opposing any of these things. Now, I wonder, why didn't we see a little Jewish boy washing the feet of a Palestinian? Why are we not telling the Jewish people, stop hating? Would you stop hating already? I want to see a commercial of Jewish people in clearly Jewish garb washing the feet of Palestinians. And, you know, we can set it up like this one. You know, you can use AI. Because, you know, it's got to be the whole setting. You've got the woman who's like on drugs and her kitchen is filthy. She's like cooking meth and stuff. So in this case, it'd be like a burned out rubble building, like a little kid with their arm missing, like gushing blood. They've been orphaned. And the Jew could be like washing their feet in that, you know, demented hellscape they created. Or like you could have him washing the feet of Nazis. You could have like somebody in a Nazi uniform. You could have the Jew on the ground washing the boots of the Nazi, you know, to teach them not to hate, right? I mean, that's what you, because Christians have to be taught not to hate. Everything the Christians believe has to be taught as hate, and that opposing degenerate or self-destructive lifestyles is really because you hate the person. And the way to get over that is to be a slave to them, to subjugate yourself underneath them. See, the original message from Jesus, when he washed the feet of his disciples, that was an inversion of roles. See, he was the boss. He was the authority. He was the king amongst them, and yet he got down on his knees and washed the feet of his disciples. That's an inversion of authority that's sending a message and is serving as an example to leaders of men into the future. You're a king, you're a boss, you're a father of a family. Well, guess what? You're a servant to the people that you rule. What a powerful message to the authority about how they should conduct themselves. What's been portrayed in that video was people with the social superiority who are higher up on the hierarchy kissing the boots and washing the feet of people who routinely abuse them. So it's not a greater authority humbling themselves willingly to those who should otherwise be beneath them. No, it's telling you that it's virtuous to accept your subjugation. It's virtuous to accept your replacement and your subservience to the people who don't believe like you, don't like you, aren't you, and are viciously attacking everything that you are, where you live, what you believe. You're supposed to appreciate that and thank them for it and wash their feet as they abuse you and move into your country without permission or violate the genuinely held tenets of your faith. See, Jesus didn't teach hate. I'm going to see a commercial telling Jews not to hate people. Are we ever going to see that? Because we do see it for Christians.
So I'm not giving up. I'm not going away. If they shut us down, I got the Alex Jones Network. I don't know, and I'm going over there. You financed it. You paid for it. Your support. I'm just telling you, here's the weird paradox. I thought we'd be shut down last year. I thought we'd be shut down 2 months ago. The receiver won't let us order new product over at Infowars.com. So we're in this paradox now where we're winning, and now they're like, well, you'll actually be open in the, you know, middle of next year now and all this stuff, and there's no money because people believe it was going to shut down. Plus, there's no product. But I convinced the receiver. I said, can we at least make fundraising posters, which are very low cost, have a high markup, people know it's an investment, to keep us on the air, kind of do that? I said, yeah, you can do that. I can just tell you, we need your support right now at InfoWarsStore.com. Three posters I designed, two I designed, Rob designed the other one. Defend the West, famous Crusader King, make no peace with evil, say Crusader King, and then do like that still image of me, and it is the bestseller. It's I've only begun to fight John Paul Jones, and it's InfoWars 1997 to 2026. And yeah, you can buy Unsigned for $25, big posters, glossy, in a tube, or you get it for $100. You're like, God, that's huge markup. Yeah, it's a fundraiser. Like when commies give NPR $200 for a ball cap, costs $15. That's the whole point. We're actually winning right now. I don't want to count chickens before they're hatched. It's not the Democrats. It's not the DOJ holdovers. They're going to shut us down. If you don't go get these posters and you don't support us, and I'm not bitching anything, I'm just telling you, I'm not saying you got to do it, then you'll be the ones that shut us down. This is a marathon, so please support us, InfoWarsStore.com. I need the money right now. It's like in Star Trek, Wrath of Khan. He goes, I need warp speed in 3 minutes, we're all dead.
Scotty, I need warp speed in 3 minutes or we're all dead.
And you guys have got us out of this over and over and over again. And me, I'm not giving up. We need to keep pushing because we've got their ass.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.